Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 32, As Prescribed, by Holly Hardman, and today it's November 7th, 2023. In this episode, Holly Hardman, director-producer of the documentary As Prescribed, her personal episode is featured on BenzoTired episode 43. Holly speaks openly about making the film and using it for benzodiazepine harm awareness and change. After growing concerned about taking Klonopin long-term, she discovered that her mystery symptoms were all due to the adverse effects of Klonopin and began a 22-month taper. The benzodiazepine community was in great part responsible for helping the film to reach completion, with general donations, cooperation, moral support, and open-hearted participation. The film will be available on streamers in spring 2024. Find more information in the show notes and on asprescribedfilm.com. Holly, welcome back to BenzoTired. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much for inviting me to return.
Always love to have you on. So As Prescribed really moved me, and I think many others, and it's so good that it's there. My first question would be, when did you decide that you needed to make a documentary?
Well, it was sort of a no-brainer, actually, because I was finishing up another documentary when I realized that I was being thoroughly damaged by clonazepam. And of course, at the time, I thought, I will taper off this and in a few months and I'll be fine. And there was we were going to premiere at, that was in May, June, and we had a pretty good sense of being invited to this film festival in the Netherlands, as a matter of fact, IDFA. And so I thought, you know, it was just, once I realized, wait a minute, this Klonopin taper thing is so much more complicated, and I found benzo buddies, and I said, wait a minute, my story is nothing, and it was still horrible, in comparison to so many other people, especially people who are polydrugged, because doctors don't understand. So, you know, I was already a documentary filmmaker, and I don't know that I gave it a second thought, but once I thought, okay, if I have the opportunity to make another film, I think it has to be about benzodiazepines and the injury they cause. But I was so ill at the time. It's not as though I could step forward and do much. I had 2 years to taper, almost 2 years. And I still had to manage this other documentary somehow. At a certain point, I started pretty soon into my own taper. I started researching and, you know, always playing with the idea, like if I am able to make a documentary, do I want to tell a story? Do I just want to give information? What would the tone and timbre be? And, you know, what I ended up doing was very different from what I first thought I would do. I first thought I was going to make something very personal in a closed space, not my story. I had read Matt Sammet's book and I contacted him. And I thought, okay, I just want to be in a closed space, an enclosed space with somebody and having access to just film moment to moment, because that experience of going through this, it is like surviving second to second. It's not saying, okay, maybe tomorrow I'll be okay. It really is nonstop. And I wanted to capture that. We started filming that. But I decided, I also found an essay written by Geraldine Burns, and I held on to that. And I said, okay, I don't even know if I want Geraldine's story to be in the film, but boy, oh boy, I connect to her. And, you know, I have to contact her and see how she would feel about being in a documentary. And really at that point, it wasn't as though I had a design that truly included Geraldine Burns. But we connected and she agreed to be filmed once I was well enough to, I still was experiencing sort of the lessening akathisia. I can't believe we pulled it off.
Wow.
But, when we first interviewed, but there was just something about her story. I said, it's great to have this footage and she knows so much and she's so engaging and likable. And as I listened to her more and got to know her, I drew the conclusion that I was going to step away from the more lyrical artistic film and do really make it an advocacy film.
Right.
And you know, that changes the direction and the opportunities, because it makes it less of, say, like a festival film, which is part of the reason we're really focusing on trying to use the film to educate.
Right. So what year did you start this idea? Can you remember?
2012. And we started filming in 2014. And, you know, we continued. We filmed through our last, I think it was the last filming was 2021. It just went on for years.
Wow. How was the process? I mean, next to Geraldine and Matt, how did you like find other people willing to like participate?
Yeah. Well, then I wanted to balance it out with other, then I said, okay, we are going to do sort of this story thing. We are going to be, it's more like we're going to, it's all right, what's happening behind closed doors. We're going to open those doors. I'm going to do it in a more, like a more standard way. I thought, okay, this will be easier for, it'll be more difficult getting through the gates because the gatekeepers tend to like more artistic stuff. But once we can get breakthrough, this will mean more to the audience we're trying to reach, because we need to satisfy the people who know what this is and create something that they feel can demonstrate to their communities, the healthcare practitioners in their towns, legislators, et cetera, that this is a very real problem and it's widespread. And we shouldn't just dance around the issue. Let's be direct in the film about what this is.
Right. And over the years that you started filming, I'm presuming here that you had a lot of material and a lot of people. How is the process of then making decisions into like what comes in the film and what doesn't?
I have to apologize. I didn't answer your last question. I needed to tell you where I found, I was going to tell,
right,
let
sorry.
Me know where I was finding other people.
Right.
Sorry. Well, let's see. I started filming. Oh yes. I was filming. We have all this good footage. We have some amazing footage that we didn't use and storylines. Like I was filming Jocelyn Peterson in Utah and not really through her, but sort of parallel to Jocelyn's story, which is really affecting. I mean, it's just, she was the last person who was going to be in the film where we just said, we can't have it be 100 minutes. You know, we had to cut it down. But anyway, her story is quite moving and great too. And that she also made a pretty wonderful recovery, but also in the Salt Lake City was Amy Peterson who did reach out to me. They were kind of in the same world. Like we tried to get this in the film, but it just seemed like we were jamming it in. Like, it didn't seem organic, but you know, Jocelyn's husband actually at a certain point helped Amy Peterson find a new home, you know, and see the townhouse in the film. So it's just all these little nuggets that it's maybe the hardest part about making a film. You become really attached to the people and the stories and knowing, you know, the power that so much of the footage has, and then just the brutal cutting process, just, yeah. So with Amy, who approached me about what her husband was going through, and when she first approached me, she was really feeling enthusiastic about her husband's, Scotty in the film, about his that he would heal, that, she was learning so much about this, and he had the care he needed, and he really did, and that he would be able to taper off. But, you know, we find, especially with the polypharmacy, that it's so much more difficult. And he was really trapped. And we didn't know that when we started filming him. We thought he was going to be a success story.
Right.
It was just heartbreaking to see. You know, I learned, because my personal story had been fairly simple. It was pretty much just the clonazepam, taper off that. Already had a good diet. Was just doing things all along that made my taper a little more civilized. And I had support. And Scotty had fabulous support, but not from a doctor.
Right.
Not from the prescriber. And as you see in the film, his prescriber could look right at him and just go, here's your medication. You know, how many, you know, like
right.
four or six medications. And so that was a powerful story that we thought was going to be quite different. And then I wanted more diversity, and sort of looking around, and then the Sam story just sort of fell in my lap one evening, where I just saw this Facebook Live and saw what had happened to Sam in the emergency room. And his father was not difficult to reach. So we connected, we hit it off right away, because he was just realizing, like, wait a minute, we've been treating my son as though he has all these mental issues, when in fact that, you know, he had normal anxiety, but he dealt with trauma, but his real issues, all these other horrible symptoms he was experiencing, were from the prescribed medication, from the clonopin.
Right.
So that's, you know, that with their cooperation, that worked out really well too. And as I say, then we had filmed other people and we just had to scale back in order to stay right. under 95 right. minutes. So,
right. And yeah. And how, I mean, I'm just trying to imagine, I mean, I'm not a filmmaker, but I think it would be incredibly difficult for me personally, having just gone through it, like in your case, and then seeing it happen again. How was that for you?
Well, that's not how I experienced it. You know, I had been a filmmaker before, so I brought in my ability to, objectivity isn't necessarily the best thing all the time, but I was always able to separate myself.
Okay.
And I think a lot of filmmakers have that, documentary filmmakers, where you just have to have that. And there were times where I would allow myself to feel, which I think is also an advantage. But so often what I was doing, I was sort of imagining myself in the cutting room, you know, working with the editor, saying, okay, we shot that, there's this moment here that we shot that day. So I'm sort of in two places, at least two places, where we're filming, and just want to get a sense of, are we creating a comfortable enough space for this person? That was also a big deal with us. The crew, I have to let you know that the most of the people, if they weren't like this, we didn't continue with them, but, all the key players, the DP and sound people that we continue to work with, they were so sensitive to what people were going through, and they really cared. That was another thing. As a group, we really cared about the people we were filming. So in that way, it was very emotional, because we would walk away sometimes just barely able to breathe. We were so, I was feeling so sort of crestfallen. And then something would happen where we'd go, but there's still hope. And then there was just the camaraderie among the crew, where we'd like to go and have really good meals together. That's one of the things as a filmmaker I've always prided myself in doing. It's like, you use part of the budget to make sure everybody sits at a table, especially if it's an evening meal, and you know, not just a rushed lunch kind of thing, but the evening meal, when we're done for the day, we go to great restaurants, try to find places that serve organic food, local, that, you know, farm to table type restaurants. And some of the nicest people tend to run those restaurants. And just really a sense of almost family. and just and where everybody can vent about how difficult some of the filming is. And yeah, you try to make it for the people who really care and are really with you on the project. You want this to be a great experience for them too, a rewarding experience.
Right, right. So then you wrap up the film, and how do you get it to, you know, what happens in this process? Because I think most of our listeners wouldn't know, but how would you get like the film seen by others?
Well, I will say this, that because I changed course, some of the opportunities that had been available to the film, because it was less artsy, were not available anymore. As a matter of fact, I had done a couple of programs at two large film festivals, one in New York at Doc NYC, which is going to be running next week, which is an amazing film festival. We did, they had at the time called an Only in New York program for films that were in production to introduce them to the industry.
Right.
And then we did in Toronto at Hot Docs. They had a distribution rendezvous program where we met with, you know, gatekeepers and sales agents, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not kicking. I changed course. And I think if I'd continued to go down that avenue of making sort of like a festival friendly, grant friendly kind of film, because I had a particular film in mind and that I'd seen it IDFA about 10 years ago. And I knew it was about, that was when I was realizing what was happening to me. It's a brilliant film, except that I knew the filmmaker didn't, it was about suicide. I knew the filmmaker didn't understand that the person she was filming was dealing with medication withdrawal.
Right, right.
And that kept coming to me because it was so tempting to say, well, I can make this lyrical film, which has a certain beauty to it, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the community will be so disappointed. You know, I think you can get sort of lauded in a certain way for doing these lyrical films. Not to say that As Prescribed doesn't have lyricism. It has a certain amount, but you know what I'm talking about. It really is a, this is what's happening, and somewhat informational verite, but though verite film. So that was, you know, so those were really important programs, and they sort of let the industry know that you're expected when your film is finished to be there. Well, we did get one of those film festivals. We got Sheffield, and that was pretty huge, but I couldn't pretend that the film was something that it wasn't. And we were meeting with sales agents and distributors, and we had some very good open doors to us, but the response was, this film is so dark. And at that point, we were dealing with the pandemic still. And it was like, people can't handle this now. Okay. So we were getting a lot of good feedback on the film yet, but there was a big but. And it's a decision I made, and I knew it was a risk because it's straight out about what it is. And I made the decision with open eyes to make sure that we built this sort of evidentiary case in the film to lay out point by point what's going on. And we tried to make it subtle. And I think we were successful with that. I'm very proud of the film.
I think it's a great film. Definitely. So about the film, one of the many things that you show, you know, at Geraldine in her state with this whole, you know, bill, getting the bills passed. How was that for you? Because, I mean, everything touched me that I saw, but that was kind of, you know, kind of like a different thing. And like in terms of like law, and I was basically, and I said this to Geraldine on the show. I was like, I'm just so shocked how these doctors responded. What was your vibe filming that?
Well, I knew when we filmed them, when they were there and they said the foul things that they did, that we had film gold. They knew it too, because I heard from attorneys. I heard from their attorneys twice.
Wow.
Don't you dare show this footage. You know, we do not give you. Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh wow. And, okay.
So, of course, you know, I looked at the legals and what would I have been at? Was I at risk? And I said this was a public hearing. I don't, you know. And so we definitely satisfied everything we needed to in order to put it in the film. So we're okay with that. We conceded like one point. Like that's why when you see them in the second hearing, we used somebody else's recording because we were told not to record. And I said, okay, we were told not to. We'll just take this audience member recording and use that to make the point, because I wanted to, you know, they came back and said the same thing. It's just extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And it's just so black and white, you know, why this continues to happen. Like, and these same people, somebody was actually defending one of those doctors, saying, oh, you should, to the legislators in the last hearing, saying, you should use his method. He knows what he's doing. I was like, are we applauding now this fellow who came twice? And then it's more than that. There's more behind the scenes about how impossible some of these leading doctors are, especially in psychiatry.
Yeah, I was appalled. Honestly, I was appalled. But I think, you know, that is a strong feature of the film. Because yeah. you're like bearing witness to this, how this is going. So I thought that was very, very powerful. Thank you for that.
We can thank, actually.
Okay, bring on the list.
We were filming Allison Page. Have you ever? She was a member of when the community was smaller, and she was another story we sort of pseudo followed, and she'd had a terrible experience, and she's very smart, and she was involved, and she actually created this book about, you know, sort of about being harmed by psychiatry. She is a lovely person, very politically engaged now. Well, I haven't been in touch with her for a while, but anyway, she was great, and she was an advocate for change. Well, she had reached out to one of those doctors that day, Kupfenwerfer, I think his name is, I don't have his name right, but it's something like that. He knew that benzodiazepines create this withdrawal syndrome. He knew that because she was in touch with him. And yet he arrived, and so she told him, she said, you know, there's gonna be this hearing at the State House, and she wanted him to be there, thinking he's gonna be like on the awareness advocate side. Instead, he shows up with this contingent from the Massachusetts Psychiatric Society. They weren't even aware.
Oh, wow.
Before. And so she thought she was doing something good. But yeah.
Gosh. So
I think even if they hadn't been there, I just don't think there was enough momentum at the time for much to have happened with the benzo bill, the first go around, second go around. I think we're closer now, and I'm really excited. We're going to be showing As Prescribed to the legislators next week.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. So where did you show the film when you wrapped it up? All the places you were able to show it.
Well, as I was saying, the film is in this, we're doing one more film festival in Australia, and we're done. I don't think, we just want to have our educational distributor. So they're just launching the film now, the video project. We want to do, you know, I see the film now as being a tool to educate, you know, we were invited to Sheffield Documentary Film Festival. I was not prepared. We also premiered at my local film festival. Like, I just felt as though it was the right thing to do. It's a good film festival too, but you know, I wasn't prepared. I had been in remission with Graves, and so many things went wrong in the the 6 weeks leading up to completing the film, so much went wrong. So I was very ill. I was full on Graves again, and we ended up having to take budget that would have been used for promotion and pay for something that went wrong with the finishing of the film.
Okay.
The handoff from the editor to the finisher, just there was some sort of miscommunication. I'll never quite understand, but I just had to take a big hit.
Right.
And so it was really great showing the film at the Berkshire International Film Festival, because Geraldine and her family were able to come. I mean, we were able to bring this community of people who knew what this was together. Some of them, the ones in the New England, Massachusetts area. And I think it meant a lot to people to gather in that space. You know, it was, people had to have a negative test in order to get into the theater. I think maybe one or two were able to get in without it, but you know, it was at a time where we were all just daring if we could take our masks off.
And right. But we remember the COVID pandemic.
In an enclosed space in a small public arena, and took my mask off. But it was exciting, and it was a really great crowd. Our Q&A was not, the Q&A itself was amazing, but the person who was trying to moderate, she had no idea. She was just not understanding what it was. And so that threw a little bit of humor into this very, you know, serious occasion.
Right.
But it was just that feeling of community. But I'd say the Sheffield, or then we went off to England for the Sheffield Doc Fest, and that was a true festival experience where everybody's there, the industry's there, and you know, we could have had some great press. Had, you know, that's where you can't go back. It's like you miss your timing. The word of mouth was excellent. We had full houses and that sort of thing. And then I think the next, our first festival after that in the United States was the Boston Globe Docs Film Festival. So at least we ended up getting into this big American film festival. Again, it was still with things being, so many of them being virtual, like this, what that was. I missed having that wonderful festival experience where you're safe in an enclosed space and just feeling free, because it's so difficult for our community to even venture out of their homes so often.
Right.
So that the festival experience has been, you know, very much affected by COVID. But what we have, when we have been able to connect, it's just meant so much. We just did a festival in Los Angeles, and you know, there were a few, you know, we had somebody who was in the band The Screamers, who's been going through this. She's now on the healing side now. Maggie Eric, she came, that meant the world. Nashira, whose husband is having a terrible experience with this now. She's a wonderful psychotherapist. She was there with her family, and I think another interested community member. And then I was really excited. One of our cinematographers was able to come. So, you know, these are, every single person who comes, you know, has gone out of their way, because it's not so easy to do these in-persons, to be in these it's not like everybody's first idea of what they want to do on a weekend is going to a movie theater anymore. So it was just so cool that we did have this great crowd, and it wasn't a lot of people, but it was like, you'd say, quality. And I participated on a panel that I loved doing and met other filmmakers and staying in touch with. And, you know, one had a film about mindfulness, which is like, oh, great, great. Because when we're healing from benzodiazepines, these are the sorts of things that help us get to other levels of healing.
Right. And I have to thank you personally, because once I started to discover what was going on with me, and mind you, this is February 2022, not that long ago, I was really disabled and cognitively declined. I was really ill. And I can't remember in you know, what came first, but I think I saw the trailer, the original trailer for As Prescribed, kind of early on in my kind of what is happening to me and what is this new world that I'm discovering. And like, I saw that trailer, I was like, you know, gosh, that's me, you know? So it gave me validation even before it came out. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so that was great. I was like, when does it come out? And there were some limitations because of where I live, because, you know, in the Netherlands, I'm not really sure how it's now, but there were like a few days that, you know, you could get a ticket, but you would have to be US based. I think there were some difficulties for me back then to come and see. So if people want to watch it now, what can they do?
Well, we have a couple. Well, one thing people can do is request a community screening. They can go to our distributor, the Video Project, and you know they're overseeing sales to universities, et cetera, et cetera. But on their platform, it's easy to find As Prescribed, and you can request, you can put in a request for a community screening. People can actually, we're going to be launching a new website, and people can reach out to us through the website. You know, did I tell you before about the Impact company we're working with, the producers, the Impact producers? They're like amazing. You can Google GSDgroup.com.
Okay.
Out of Los Angeles. We are so fortunate. They're not even benzodiazepine victims, but they get it. They get it. And they know it's a hugely important topic that needs to be handled properly. We need to get the information out. And they had worked on a film about the opioid crisis and even managed to make some change in laws on a federal level in the United States. They were part of a movement to do that. So yeah, that's why, yeah, it's always this, you were saying earlier something about money and funding, and it's like, you know, these things, they have to be funded. We're still raising money for that. But we can do great things. So yeah, and other upcoming screenings. Well, next week we're screening. It's a private screening though for the mass legislators. And then after that, we are doing a public screening with the Alliance for Benzodiazepine Best Practices, a partnering screening. And we're also doing our last film festival is the Sydney Women's Film Festival. And Sydney Women's International Film Festival, SWIFF. And I think that will be Asia Pacific. And then everything else, we're going to make sure this can be seen everywhere. The Alliance will be, we're thinking, okay, Alliance screening is Western Hemisphere and Sydney Women's is Asia Pacific. You know, we'll see how that works out. But we want to make sure everybody has access for those screenings. And then we are... there's something else. Oh, we're probably going to do some sort of pop-up in December, like a holiday screening in December. And then in the new year, there's an organization we're talking to about a community screening. So that's the thing now. And then, you know, I was going to put the film on Film Hub and very likely still will. I don't know. That's being sorted out. But that was the aggregator I have been working with on my other film. And things have just changed so much. I have to take a second, third, and fourth look at how all this has changed since my last film.
Right, right. So in terms of the responses that you've gotten, what was the most surprising one or ones that you've gotten in terms of feedback of the film?
That it does communicate what we go through well to people who don't know what this is. We have to get them to see it. Because once they do, they're like, wow. Wow, I know this person. Now I understand what was happening to my brother-in-law. You know, oh my God, I think my cousin, somebody I work with, went through this. Now I understand. So because we as a community understand, and I feel it. Maybe it's just the people who are contacting me, but the feedback I get is that the film is...
well, at least relatable. Okay,
well, the film is excellent. I was going to say something else, but we'll just say yeah. I love that one. The Film Fest report called it superb. I love that.
Yeah. And I think it's just, you know, I keep mentioning it on my show that I think it's awesome that so many people are now doing just all sorts of things. There's my little podcast over here in the Netherlands. And then we've got Emma Haynes, who's working on her documentary. Maybe you want to comment on that.
I love the title of her film, Toxic.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. I've connected with her. I think she's great. And I'm eager to see how, you know, how she develops this. I support her 100%. And yeah, that's something to look forward to. Toxic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I've had Emma Haynes on the show and we're still in touch and she's just so, so lovely. And, you know, even though benzodiazepine withdrawal is so awful, as you know, as we know, you know, at least for me, Benzo Tired, this podcast, is something good that comes out of it. And what I also mentioned on the show several times is now younger people, people way younger than me, I'm 40, are not having this anymore. And now we've got all these, you know, social media things and stuff, and people are really standing up. Like, this is not okay. People need to be educated, and everyone does it in their own way. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone that, you know, brings something to this community, like yourself, like As Prescribed, it's just, you know, we need all of these things. Mm-hmm. And one day, you know, hopefully people will massively wake up, see the problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why we need you, you know, we like people like you. So I'm so grateful. Yeah. Well, we need each other.
I love your podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm trying.
I'm so glad you know, I know for a while you were like, I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. And thank God you're still doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a way that you can.
Yes. Yes. I had to take a hiatus, which was good. You know, I mentioned it, like, it was good to reflect on things and, but you know, I'm intending to keep on going and, like, you know, bless Geraldine Burns for her lovely podcast. I love her podcast. Yeah. I love Foster's podcast. You know, I'm like all into podcasts and films and, you know, my website is up and, you know, your trailer of As Prescribed is there. And, like, you know, all the other things that I found, like A to V out of Van. I'm not sure if you've seen that one.
Oh, years ago. Yes.
Yes. Yes, oh, it's on the website.
You see that and you're like, why wasn't this responded to? And you know that the people were, like, people like, especially Barry Haslam, for example, who was writing to legislators every day.
Yep.
And they just, it's just the arrogance.
Right.
Ignore these.
I tried to get him on the show. I tried because he did really do some advocacy, but it's hard to
really
look around. Well, this is like pre-internet, probably, you know. So he did a lot of work, and I really want to. Yep. Well, I'm doing it now. But through someone that I was on Benzo Buddies at the time, who knew him personally, and he was just not doing that great physically to make it on the show. But he did some awesome work. And that's something that people may forget in this day and age. Maybe we won't. But, you know, we come from times where we didn't have the internet. And there were people, I don't know what they would do back then, like write to papers or, you know, stuff like that. But there have been warriors before.
Well, that still matters. You know, the press still matters. And that we will, if we just are communicating among ourselves on the internet and not going beyond, we're not going to achieve our goals. But it's so nice that I can actually take a link to your podcast. It's a real thing that I have shared with people to say, listen to this particular podcast. You know, it's like, it's something concrete, even though we say, oh, the internet, it's
right. Right. I mean, that's the gift of, you know, the internet, being able to connect. And what I try to do with having the guests on the show, and like you were, you know, a guest, and it's a life story, you know, it's about your benzos, but it's a life story, you know, it's, and that's, you know, and I want to give people a voice. I want to keep, you know, this is real, you know, even if I someday am not around, you know, this is proof as well. Like, this is people's testimonies on what happened.
Part of the beauty of that is lived experience has taken on a validity that it used to not have. You know, people have pushed and pushed and pushed. And like even within the United States, with the FDA updating for the benzodiazepine risks, that had so much to do with lived experience stories being submitted to them.
Yep.
Think that... Benzodiazepine Information Coalition and I think the Alliance was involved in that too, like organizing a call to action to have those reports submitted. It really made a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think now with the power of the internet and the ways that we can connect with one another, you know, it's got to come from us. It's got to come from the people that have been through it. And we want to just, you know, inform people about the risks. And I think, you know, we have every right to know that this can happen. And I think we're well on our way. And I want to thank you once again for contributing to this, you know, harmed community. Are there any projects that you would like to share with the community that you're currently working on?
I'm working on the on As Prescribed. It's such a, I mean, aspects of our outreach. Yeah, sure. We're concentrating, of course, still on Massachusetts, but we'd like to see legislation wherever it can possibly happen. And we're looking for people who will sort of carry the banner for their area, and we will help them. We also want to see disability rights recognized. That's if we can get sort of phase one done, we can get to phase two, just to use the film for good.
Right. Well, hopefully when Bind gets really through all of these, you know, phases that it needs to go through to become a real thing, hopefully that will help disability cases, at least some acknowledgement of that we've been harmed, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Haven't we ever? Thank God that most of us make it through.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time, Holly. And we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Naftal. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race. And don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.